Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, China. What in the world is taking place in China? I was reading this an article that said this. It says Christians in China claim government harassment. You probably saw some of this in the news recently. This one in particular is coming off of a website entitled Voice of America. And Voice of America, in their story here, the date of it is written by Sarah Williams on June 16th out of Washington. She says this: last week, Christians in southeastern China, city of, I think it's pronounced Wenzhou, prevented an attempt by demolition workers to remove a cross from the roof of the Gantu, and I could be mutilating these words, I understand that, but Gantu Church. Chinese Christians and human rights activists view the incident as the latest attempt by authorities to subvert Christianity. In April, the city's huge Sangjiang Church was demolished, allegedly because it failed to meet building codes. And so we see this taking place in China now, seem to ratchet up some of the persecution taking place on various groups throughout China. But on the flip side, we hear good news about China as well. And that's what I want to talk about on the program here today. The idea of there's a book out called China's Reforming Churches. It's edited by Bruce Bogus, and it's written, or it's published by Heritage Books, and their website is www.heritagebooks.org. That's Reformation Heritage Books. And it says the title of the book is China's Reforming Churches, Mission, Polity, and Ministry in the Next Christendom. And so I wanted to get the author on the program here today to give us some insight as to what's taking place there in China and what we can do if it's a solid Christian reformed work that's taking place behind that wall there in China, then it's certainly something that we want to encourage. So with that, Bruce, welcome to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Thank you very much, Kevin. I'm glad to be here.
Bruce, I just want to walk through what your book speaks about and about the issue taking place. Why don't we start with you giving us a little bit of a synopsis of the book in general, just an overview of what the book is about and why you decided to edit a book like this at this particular time.
Well, it's in part because of what you were just saying, to inform readers here in America who are used to hearing stories about people being, churches in China being shut out of their facilities, or even more recently about facilities being torn down, and things that we would call persecution, oppression of Christian worship services and the like. We hear a lot of those stories in the U.S., and that creates an impression that of what the situation in China is like for Christians, and especially for those who worship in the house churches. And that impression, although there's enough truth to it that you know, the reports are not false, it's skewed. And one of the things that we were trying to address with this book was to tell the good side, the good things that you were just talking about, to try to inform readers here in America that get a selective sort of news reporting, the things that make headlines, that there is a lot going on in China today that is very positive, that we should be thankful for, that we should be paying attention to, and trying to support and help as best we can. Mm-hmm. And that the government itself has, over time, taken an increasingly tolerant view and stance towards the house churches. And these instances we hear reported in the news tend to be exceptions. Now, they're still not acceptable exceptions, in my opinion, and I think many of your listeners would agree with that, but they tend to be exceptions rather than the norm. And the book is trying, in part, to inform listeners about, readers of the book, your listeners, about what's more normative, what's more ordinary.
Mm-hmm. Now, the title speaks about China's reforming churches, so it's talking about a reformed traditions within evangelicalism. And but when you write in the book, you use Presbyterianism specifically. I just want to make sure not to offend our Reformed Baptist brethren, but just to let them know that we're talking about, you know, Reformed theology, and specifically, though, looking at it under the history of Presbyterianism in China. Is that a fair way to state this?
That's correct, Kevin, and really, we're focused in on the Reformed, the development of Reformed churches, Reformed theology, the indigenization of the Reformed tradition in China today. There are, you know, the house churches in large are evangelical, and there's much going on that's good, and for people, you know, our Baptist friends and so forth to be very encouraged. They have wonderful work going on also, but we're trying to focus in on the one good story about this. Well, what we call a kind of reformation that's taking place among the house churches, some house churches in China today.
The book is broken up into four sections, and I wanted us just to walk through these sections a little bit and see if we can get you to give us an overview. Again, Bruce didn't write all of these here. He's the editor of it, so I'm not going to ask him to completely tell us about each one of these. They're written by a number of different authors, some that some of our listeners will be familiar with, such as I saw Guy Waters, who's been with us on the broadcast before, as well as Van Drunen. Is he in here as well? I'm looking for his name. There he is. David Van Drunen is listed here as well. So there's a number of different authors. And here's the four sections, though, of the book. The history of Presbyterianism in China is number one. Number two, Presbyterianism in China today, and then challenges and opportunities for Presbyterianism in China, and then appropriating a tradition. And so those are the four different categories that are here. Bruce, tell us a little bit about what is the history of Presbyterianism in China?
Oh, that's a great, great story. And some of that story, in fact, in the book, much of that story is told from the perspective of the mission work that was done by North Americans and European Presbyterians in China and Reformed brothers in China. The mission to China was the first and the by far the largest mission field, mission work that was carried out by American Presbyterians. It opened, I think it was in 1837. It was a major effort for a long period of time that led up to 1948-49, when the Communist Revolution sort of was successful and now declared the People's Republic to be founded. We tell some of that history in this book because it is really important for, I think, both our readers here in the U.S., but as well as around the world to know that Presbyterianism is not a latecomer. It may become late by the perspective of China's long history, but it has been around for going on two centuries now, and there is a tradition, there is a history there, and it's an important one, and it has many heroic figures in it.
Excellent. I noticed that one portion of that says a brief history of the Korean Presbyterian mission to China. I think that a lot of people are not aware of just how much of an influence Korean Presbyterians have had in that region. Is that been grossly understated?
No, I think that you're correct on that, and that's exactly why we included a chapter on the Korean movement. It's interesting. Nevius was a missionary, a Presbyterian missionary to Shandong, China. And he advocated a certain missionary strategy, a mission plan, that was only partially realized, if that, in China, where he served. But he was early invited over to the Korean mission as it took root. The Korean mission actually sort of accidentally arose out of the mission to China when certain Koreans encountered Presbyterian missionaries in China, working in China, and took Presbyterianism back with them after they were converted. And very quickly, having embraced the Nevius plan, the Korean church rose up as its own mission-sending organ body, and the first place that they also turned to was China. Of course, they received so much of their own heritage from China in ancient times, and so they began to send missionaries back to China. In fact, the very year that their General Assembly was founded, they also commissioned missionaries to China and sent them out. So the mission, the Korean mission to China for the Presbyterian Church, is as old as the Presbyterian Church of Korea, and has been ongoing. And they, for example, they had the last missionary to be pulled out after the Communist Revolution. He was there into the 50s. And they were among the first to start heading back in as opportunities arose. And they clearly have the largest presence among Reformed and Presbyterian global Christianity in China today.
Let me remind our listening audience, we're speaking with Bruce Bogus. He is the Associate Professor of Philosophy and Theology at Reformed Theological Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. He's also was a co-organizer, along with David Homeland, of the China's Reforming Churches Conference. He's a former pastor, and he's a teaching elder in the Presbyterian Church in America, where he serves on the Candidates and Credentials Committee. So all of those students trying to get involved there, get a position somewhere, this is the man you want to talk to.
Well, I should clarify that.
Okay.
I serve on the Credentials Committee of the Mississippi Valley Presbytery, not at a General Assembly level.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Now, the GA is going on right now. Are you currently at the GA?
You know, I'm not. Okay. It was a hard decision this year, but I had a fellowship to attend another conference in Michigan, actually, and tried to hide away in a quiet place here to call and talk to you today.
Well, good. We're so glad that you did. Good friend Mel Duncan is there at the GA, and he's got some events going on there. I was hoping to touch base with him. I think we'll allow him to debrief a little bit and maybe get in touch with him next week and see if we can get him on the program to tell us how that went. Last year it was right here in Greenville, and so it was very convenient. I was able to go over and do a lot of interviews. This year it's in Texas, and so didn't make the trek myself as well. Well, let me ask you, now we talked about the rich historical background of Presbyterianism in China, but what about today? What about Presbyterianism in China today? What should we know?
Well, first of all, I think I would like for you and your listeners to know that there is an emerging Presbyterianism in China among the house churches today. And one of the most encouraging things about it is that this is being led by house church pastors who are trying to be faithful ministers to the people that are under their care. And as they're doing so, they're going to the Bible and asking questions about how do you carry out the work of the ministry? What does God have to say about how the church ought to function, how it ought to operate? And they're discovering Reformed polity out of the scriptures, and then finding Reformed resources from our own tradition, and sometimes finding Reformed people who are very active in trying to promote Reformed theology and Reformed church development in China today. But it's a grassroots movement to a large extent that's coming from the arising out of the practical demands of the ministry of these faithful house church pastors as they wrestle with scripture and the demands of ministry.
Brent Fulton wrote a piece there, one of the segments in the book. He says, one of the chapters, he says, in their own words, perceived challenges of Christians in China. What are the Christians in China saying?
Yeah, that's a very interesting chapter. And that chapter is reporting more broadly on house church pastors in general. And there are a number of things that they're saying. One of the things that they are all in agreement on is that the need for trained church leaders, for sound theological education, for men who are ordainable to the ministry and willing to actually do the work of the ministry far outstrips the supply right now. That these sort of basic theological education, training needs, the church has grown so fast in China over decades now that what's going on there. It boggles the mind. You know, the problems are good problems. It's the problems you have from rapid growth and many, 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 a church that's flooded with first-generation Christians who are just learning these things for the first time, and a church that's actually unsupported by the kinds of institutions that we have in Europe and North America where the church has been long established. And so you can just imagine the things, how they're wrestling with what does biblical teaching mean for the family. That's a significant concern all across the house churches and even the official churches in China today. And leadership training and development, enormous concern there. And it goes on, and you can just imagine. What's another part of that that's fascinating, I think, for people in the North American context is how low issues like how do I live out my faith in the midst of a communist regime, you know, under a communist regime, actually comes. Now, that informs all of these other issues. That's never off the table. Mm-hmm. But for the Chinese brothers and sisters, that's just sort of the condition of all of life. That's not a new or different sort of factor that they're dealing with. Mm-hmm. That's just the way life is. For them, it's much more, how can I be a godly father, husband? How can we have good theology? How can I get a hold of good Bible teaching so that I might be able to interpret my Bible and preach it better as I stand in the pulpit, and these sorts of things.
Hmm. Bruce, you write a chapter there about a few significant ones, a conversion of two of China's leading reformers. Tell us quickly that story. I know that I wish we had more time for you to give us the details, but briefly, what has taken place in those significant conversions?
Oh, it's actually conversations with two house church pastors.
Okay.
But I can tell you about a conversion if you would like, because it's certainly encouraging to hear these sorts of things.
Well, let's hear what you found out in those significant conversations then that you had with them. I misread it here, couldn't make it out, but what were they telling you about their leading reformers that were there?
Yeah, these fellows that I was speaking with that are, you know, the main characters, they're not the only characters that are taking part in this conversation that is reported on in the chapter, but the two leading fellows are working in two different large metropolitan areas within China. They are both working very actively on establishing not only sort of reform within their own congregations, but also at the level of they've adopted, for example, Reformed Confessions of Faith, and they are working towards establishing or have already established presbyteries, and they've been working on trying to develop an orderly ordination process where mm-hmm. candidates can be examined and actually be candidates, and there can be a recognition of their credentials when they are, and to try to put things into a good order so it's not so haphazard. And these are the things that are preoccupying them right now. But one of the really encouraging things to listen to them is what they're dreaming about in the future.
Mm.
They understand what the world they live in. These are men who have spent brief periods of time under arrest for their faith, and yet they're undaunted. They're looking to the future. One of them is talking about 500 years out. You know, if you're waiting to see the fruit of your work 500 years from now, then you must be a reformer, as he puts it. And he says, you know, here's what I'm giving myself to in my life so that 500 years from now, there may be this foundation in China of vibrant Reformed Christianity, where the Chinese are now reaching the world with the gospel, and where there's strong institutions of education that have been established. And these are the works that they're not only dreaming about, but they're actually building now in China. And you don't know the future, and you don't know how it's going to go, and you don't know what opportunity these works will have to flourish or not. But to hear them is humbling and encouraging.
Well, that same optimism that we hear in the voice of that Chinese Christian, we seem to hear in the subtitle of this book. It says Mission, Polity, and Ministry in the Next Christendom. And so talking, it seems to be pointing to the fact about the growing influence of the Chinese church and in a reformed way throughout not only China, but throughout the world. I did a broadcast. I was looking at some of the numbers associated with the radio broadcast. And I noticed on 1 month that we had 1,000 downloads from China. And so I immediately got a hold of a Chinese pastor here in the upstate of South Carolina. I brought him in and spoke with him on air. He was actually here in the studio. And then at the end of the broadcast, I said to him, you know, why don't you just take the last X number of minutes on the broadcast and speak to the Chinese people that are listening? Obviously, 1,000 of them had downloaded various broadcasts. So why don't you take some time to speak to them? And so he did. The people in Greenville had no clue what he was saying, but he spoke to them in their language, and they just, you know, I asked him to do two things, you know, to encourage them in the gospel and give out the gospel as well, and he did that for about 5 or 7 minutes or so here on the broadcast. So it was very encouraging, and so glad that we could play some sort of a role in trying to reach out to what is taking place there in China. Bruce, we appreciate you doing the work here, the editing work of pulling this together and the chapters that you wrote yourself, and letting our listeners and Christians all across the country know about what is taking place in China and helping them to see how they can get involved in encouraging this. We really appreciate the work that you're doing.
Well, thank you very much, Kevin, for highlighting it on your program. And I hope your listeners will be greatly encouraged, not only by our discussion, but also by the book itself.
Excellent. I'm going to give the information about where they can get a copy of the book, but I appreciate you squirreling away there in a quiet place, even while you're at that conference. Is that PCRT's conference?
It's Acton Institute Conference.
Okay. Well, great. It's great that you were able to get away. We appreciate you doing so and giving us some time today on the broadcast.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Once again, that was Bruce Baugus, and Baugus, I should say, Baugus, B-A-U-G-U-S, Bruce Baugus, and he is the editor of the book we've been talking about for the last few minutes. It's called China's Reforming Churches, and again, it's available out on Reformation Heritage Books website. Reformation Heritage Books. Their website is heritagebooks.org. That's www.heritagebooks.org. And you can go out to that website and find out how you can get a copy of this book. By the way, I mentioned the idea of the Chinese pastor that we brought in to the studio to be able to talk about that issue. You can find that broadcast out on our website. Our website is www.sermonaudio.com/knowingthetruth. If you go out there, and I think if you just type in the search engine there at that website, the word China, it'll bring up that discussion that I had with that Chinese pastor. There was interesting. I remember one of the items that we talked about with that pastor. He was now working with married couples, specifically married couples that had left China and come to the United States. And one of the issues that he brought up, I specifically remember from that broadcast, was the idea of leaving and cleaving. Because of the Chinese tradition about, you know, living with extended families, they were having quite an issue with the idea of leaving and cleaving, as the Bible talks about in married couples. So I found it very interesting what he was talking to us about during that particular broadcast. Remember this. In all of the issues that we talk about here on the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast, remember this. The Lord Jesus Christ said, He said, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. We'll see you next time.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth. To keep this ministry strong and coming your way, you can make a financial gift at knowingthetruth.org by clicking on the donate button. You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.